Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Telltale Heart, a Cardiovascular Digest for pharmacists. We have a solo mini episode today. If you're wondering what we're doing some long episodes, and then maybe going to do some mini episodes. I know we're gearing up for the ACC. There are several things that are coming down the pipe in terms of guidelines and some great people we are going to interview with those as they come out, but we have to wait for them to come out on embargo. So please stay tuned for content that is coming. We're excited to bring you all this. As you might have seen, you've seen some video-based content. We're going to continue to grow that. And as we plan for the ACC meeting, some live on-site interviews during that particular time. So please stay tuned. However, as always, if you like our podcast, please like and subscribe. Give us ratings. Email us content you would like to see or formats you would like to be engaged in. We would love to hear from you. So please let me know from that standpoint. So today's mini episode contains two things. One will be a clinical trial, and the other is kind of more of a conceptual talking point related to an American College of Cardiology event. And so we'll jump into the first trial that was released this past week, and it's pretty exciting to talk about, as a lot of people have been very excited about these anti-factor 11A inhibitors that are going to be coming in the future to maybe work on providing some solution that provides antithrombotic efficacy but decreases the bleeding risk. However, we've seen a couple of trials that have not been positive. One with the agent we're going to talk today, which was ansodexin that was done in the Oceanic AF trial. It was a phase 3 trial looking at the use of ansodexin 50 milligrams in patients with atrial fibrillation. I'm not going to get knee deep in the trial, but that trial turned out not to be positive. A couple different thoughts and processes around why that may be. Could have been the dosing that was used, maybe a little bit about the patient population and their history about anticoagulation use, et cetera. That actually will be a good episode on another day to put in context as we talk about all these agents and maybe bring them in. However, a concurrent study was going on, the Oceanic Strokes trial, that was looking at this agent in patients with not cardioembolic stroke, but stroke that occurs as a secondary prevention standpoint. For patients post, non-cardioembolic stroke or high-risk TIA from that standpoint. So the Oceanic Stroke trial was designed and it was informed, interestingly, by multiple phase 2 studies that really honed in on not just the dose and the target trough, but the patient population to be studied in this. And so it was informed study showing that ansodexin provided more than a 90% inhibition of factor 11A at peak and trough concentrations, and in theory without increasing bleeding, especially when you looked at this very well-designed subset patient population, which we'll talk about in the phase 3. So Oceanic Stroke was a phase 3 trial conducted at 702 sites across 37 countries and regions. Investigators enrolled about 12,237 patients with a mean age of 68 years, and 34% were women. And they had to have an acute non-cardioembolic stroke, which was defined as a NIH stroke scale score of 15 or less, or they had to have a high-risk TIA with an ABCD score for that, or squared score of 6 or 7. And they had to have a history of atherosclerosis or evidence of plaque or non-lacunar stroke on imaging. So this is where you get into that subset of the population, both the type of non-cardioembolic stroke, kind of this lower risk or high risk patient population, and then this atherosclerotic plaque. And historically, these patients would often receive dual or single antiplatelet therapy, often dual antiplatelet therapy for an early on phase of their treatment from that standpoint. And then, of course, because this is an AFib study, they excluded all those patients with atrial fibrillation or other non-cardioembolic strokes. The index event was an ischemic stroke in 95% of the patients, so 27.4% of the cohort did undergo IV thrombolysis and or endovascular thrombectomy for acute treatment. And the most common TOS substripe was a large artery atherosclerosis, which was 41%. Followed by stroke of undetermined etiology, 29%, and small vessel inclusion of 22%. And more than one-fifth of the patients had a prior stroke or TIA. And the mean NIH stroke score at baseline was 2, with 30% of the patients having a 3 or greater. The investigators took in this trial and randomized patients within 72 hours of symptoms onset to ansodexin at 50 milligrams once daily or placebo. And they noticed a reduction in ischemic stroke was observed active treatment in consistent across the various subgroup. So what you saw is through 2 year of follow-up, the rate of ischemic stroke was 6.2% among those who received the ansodexin and 8.4% in those who received placebo. So that was a hazard ratio of cause specifica 0.74 with a 95% confidence interval 0.65 to 0.84. And the absolute risk reduction was 1.9% by 1 year, equating to a number needed to treat of 53. You know, so the curves diverge very early and continue throughout the treatment and study period. And you can kind of see that it also reduced several secondary outcomes, including all strokes, which also is a 0.75 hazard or 0.74 hazard ratio, disabling or fatal stroke, which was about a 0.69% hazard ratio. Cardiovascular death, MI, and stroke were also reduced at 0.83, which was interesting to see this kind of MACE, 3-point MACE mortality, and then also, or 3-point MACE endpoint that was reduced, and then all-cause mortality, MI or stroke, was also reduced. And what was great to see, there was no difference or significant difference between ansodexin and placebo in the group in terms of bleeding, in terms of ISHT or International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis major bleeding. And you can see that there was no difference there or safety event. So it really didn't show any major or clinically relevant non-major bleeding in that showed a signal. So it really did lead to some degree of balance. Of course, we're waiting for this agent to be approved by the FDA, but this is the first kind of positive trial we've had with the factor 11A inhibitors in a very unique population that was really, the study was really well designed for. And we will hear about more of these agents coming out, or at least their data soon. I think several trials have ended. We obviously saw that some of the trials have stopped for milvexian, for example, and acute coronary syndrome. So we got to understand what's at play here in some of these agents and why they're not passing in their phase 3. But here is the first study or agent that appears to be promising in a certain population. And so it could be a new agent that we see on top of dual antiplatelet therapy or beyond after that to really reduce not just stroke, but again, this major adverse cardiac events that occurred in this particular study, or at least that secondary endpoint. And so as more studies come out from this or sub-studies come out from this, we'll really work to unpack this and what this is going to mean. So we're going to shift gears for the rest of this mini episode and talk a little bit about workforce development improvement. The American Cardiology is currently working on a strategy, and they recognize, and I love this, is how do we really do this whole concept around workforce? And I don't want to say it's just development. It's really a process where they're trying to work on this whole initiative regarding the ability to not just promote training and education and building pipelines for future physicians and nurses and pharmacists to manage cardiovascular disease. But part of this workforce development is how do we take people that are engaged in this world today and get them more accustomed to being able to be practicing at the top of the license and focusing around well-being and team-based care. So it's really a strong workforce initiative that is really great that they're recognizing, okay, we have an opportunity or a situation where we could be really short in the cardiovascular community to manage our patients, and the patient's needs are going to be expanding. And that's due to a multitude of things, retirements, additional patient volume, people phasing out, et cetera. And so they're really looking at a cohesive strategy that looks at developing those pipelines, investing in training and enrichment across all the team members, and really looking for ways to grow and structure that process. And my goal for this brief intro and conversation is we're going to kind of talk about some of this over the next several episodes and maybe through ACC to really talk about how that strategy is unfolding and maybe do some interviews with some of the key leaders that are in this and see how maybe you can feel engaged if you're not currently regularly managing cardiovascular patients or be a part of this process and hope that you can be inspired that you can change the trajectory of cardiovascular disease in the United States. So anyways, those are our brief 2 points for this week's mini episode. Like I said, we're going to be having longer episodes soon. We're waiting for some guidelines and other things to come out. So stay tuned. If you have any other thoughts or comments, let me know. Thanks, and join us next time. Bye-bye.